This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, welcome. We're at the TST Big Event, the 20th year. We're so darn excited to be here. I think it's our fourth year. I just so love to do father and son shop owners. And with me here today is Andrew Knutson and Peter Knutson, father, son. Hi, guys.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good to have you here. Coventry Motors in Huntington Station. That's Long Island.
Yep.
What's Long Island like? The first thing I think about is cost of living. And then the next thing I think about is, what the heck's the labor rate down on Long Island?
It's up there.
189?
Right now, we're 152.
152, okay.
Yeah.
And that's just the starting number?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a diagnostic labor rate at 225.
Good. A minimum, bringing a car?
At least minimum 1 hour.
1 hour?
You know.
Who's doing the diag in the company?
So we have his old partner, Bill. And they worked together back when they were at Jaguar. They were the ones who actually started the company. So Bill's our lead diagnostic guy. He's really good. And we're training a newer guy, Jonathan, to kind of help take the load off of him and work with him. And that's working out pretty well.
Since its relaunch in 2020, the Napa Auto Care member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the Napa programs, promotions, benefits, and other information available to help their businesses thrive. If you're a Napa Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal. Not a Napa Auto Care Center? Well, contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the Napa family.
Peter, this is so cool to find out that you worked at Jaguar dealership.
20 years. Yeah.
20 years. And then you got the itch.
They sold to a huge conglomerate. And I figured it used to be mom and pop's owner type thing when I knew him for 20 years. I met Bill when he was 18. We've been together 42 years.
Oh, my God. Let's just stop for just a moment. I want to go back to the Jaguar story. But you and your partner, Bill, 40-some years, did you work at Jaguar together?
Yeah? Yeah, we were both working there. And then I was the shop foreman, and I trained him. And we've been together ever since. Then I was the dispatcher, and then I wrote service and stuff. So, wow. Quite a long time.
So take me back to the day that the place was sold and you didn't want to play in big corporate America.
Well, they just had that meeting where they were explaining to you how great your life was going to be, but we needed to spread out the work to everybody, which basically meant we're paying you less money. And I said, okay, I'll see you. That was it. I left.
Okay, I'll see you. And you went to Bill.
Well, we were talking about that prior to like maybe doing something on our own, because the owner had called me and said, look, I got some offers I'm selling, because I was one of the five people that kind of ran the dealership together. That's always, the dealerships have like a few people that actually run the place.
And you were in the loop.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he called me and said, so I said to Bill, you know, so we were talking maybe a year before we left.
Okay.
Looking around, whatever. So I did it with an SBA loan. I said, well, I'll put something together. Bill's not a money person. He's just strictly a car person.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I
yeah.
put the whole thing together. And then I want to say in March of 99, I left when they had that conversation with me. And then I was home for the summer doing the banking and getting everything together. And then in August, Bill came on board and we rented a place. And it's been like that ever since. We bought the building and everything.
Cool. That was my next question.
Yeah, no, we bought the building, and which was our main goal, because it's the car business. It's not like we're going to sell the business a lot of times. And we did that and we paid it off in 2000. So 99 to 2000, now we own the building. And it's called Coventry Motors because when we were leaving, a lot of the Jaguar customers were going to come, not a lot, but some. And we didn't want to call it like the Jag Shop or just Jags, because eggs are in one basket. So his wife,
Kelly
said, why don't you call it something related? And she came up with Coventry Motors. And I said, I like that. That's a good idea. So it's been Coventry Motors ever since.
It's a great name.
If you own a Jaguar, you know what Coventry Motors means. We also work on British cars, you know, TR6s and stuff.
Okay.
So if you're a British Anglophile, you know what Coventry Motors is. If you don't, you just think it's a cute little name and you bring your Ford in. So I'm playing both sides of the fence.
Brilliant. Brilliant marketing move.
It worked out. Because all the other shops that were called Series 3, just Jaguar, they're all out of business. I'm the only one left. They were all started by ex-mechanics.
And you felt that you needed to do all makes and all models, but still concentrate on Jaguars.
Yeah.
What percentage of your business is a Jaguar?
Realistically, since the day we opened, that's less than 20%. It's just that the margin is much better for us because we know the car. But he'll tell you, we use Mitchell on demand first, and now we're with Techmetrics, but they keep track of what you're working on. And I showed Bill, I mean, I want to say in the second year, I said, look, Most of the cars are, believe it or not, GM, Ford, and Toyotas. It was only 20% of Jaguars actually come to us. But it's only was the two of us and three of us. So
I can see a Euro shop. I mean, because they're dealing with a much bigger base than just Jaguars.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just are there enough Jaguars in your town to obviously to make this worthwhile?
Well, in 99, we went to Jaguar in 81. Well, Sportique was the name of the company. Yeah. And we went there. I was there, then Bill came. And I want to say like 82, everybody on Long Island had to have a Jaguar. I mean, mm-hmm. it was just this fad thing from the 80s up into the 90s. And we were just selling them. I mean, they had their issues, everybody, and people were just buying them. We were 2 weeks behind. We were up to our butts in work. And basically, as a mechanic, you kind of want to work on something that breaks all the time. So Jaguars break all the time, electrically and stuff. So
good for you. So bad for the owner.
Right. So we were busy. And then when we left, it was still peaking. People were still buying them. But then, 2006, maybe 8, Land Rover started to creep in. People were backing away from Jags. The design changed. I don't know if you've seen a Jaguar lately. It looks like a Mercedes. And then down there, the store that we were in, they do Land Rover and Jag, but they're mostly Land Rover. It's like that's their biggest thing. It kind of faded. So the fact that we didn't call it just Jags was even more of a home run as it faded.
It was brilliant. Now, did you buy Bill out?
Yes, recently we have.
Bill's, oh, nice.
Bill wanted to. Well, with Andrew was taking over, I said, okay, let's get Bill on the other side. He'll still stay here. He's not going anywhere. He's been with me 40 years. He's not going anywhere. And he loves it. Bill loves it. He's been loving it. We paid him off. And then Andrew will eventually buy the shares of the company.
Sure. Interesting dynamic now. So you said Andrew will. It hasn't happened yet, but a succession plan is underway.
Mm-hmm. We're actually working with Cecil Bullard from the Institute on that.
Excellent. How does a conversation like that start? Does Andrew go to Father Peter and say, Dad, can you kind of crystallize my future a little bit? Or Dad, would you ever be thinking of selling? Or Dad, do you see a really good, strong future for me here? How's it?
Yeah, to remember, Andrew's been here since he was 9 years old. Yeah. I have pictures of him working in the shop. And he would come after school, like elementary school. He's been coming there forever. The customers know him and everything. So it's his thing. I have more children. And that's not their thing. They do other things. You know what I mean? I have two policemen in the family. They're not interested. He has always been interested in this. When he got out of college, he came and he was working part-time in college, but then he came full-time and this was his thing. I didn't force him to come in. I was just going to sell everything and go home. But I could see that it was his thing and he loves it. And I said, okay, well, you can take it over then. I don't care.
He told me a story earlier this morning about he used to take things apart. And when you see that happening, parents, mm-hmm. don't tell him he's going to be an accountant, a doctor, or a lawyer.
No, right? No. I'm under no delusions of my children's capabilities, okay? I don't have any rocket scientists in the group, if you know what I mean. So they're all bright.
Your granddaughter, Cora, is pretty smart. And Kinsley.
Well, it's another level. That's different. But they can be whatever they want. But you need to be honest with yourself. Okay, my son likes this. He's good at this. There's no reason not to pursue this. Because I'm fixed cars my whole life. Yeah. And my whole family's policemen. Everybody in the family was a policeman. It's not my cup of tea. You know what I mean? I did something else. I come from a very large family, but I don't mind him being in the trade. I mean, most people are like, oh, I don't want him to be a mechanic. You know, parents can be. I want him to be this or that. I was never like that. If you're happy and you can support yourself more, yeah, that's it.
When you hear the occasional pounding on the table, Peter is an incredibly animated speaker. So, it's not like we have somebody trying to knock on the door to get in here. Yeah. But please don't stop that because I love your animation. So you're both here. You brought one of your technicians?
Yeah, our youngest technician, Jonathan. Yeah.
And you just came out of
there. Keith is still going and Jonathan's sitting on the edge of the seat. So I just texted him. I said, listen, we're going to go do a podcast with Carm. Yeah. I go, just stay here. And then when the vendors, they're going to take a break. I said, go in there and talk to the vendors. I said, talk to the guys from MyScan, talk to ATS and just, I go, ask them questions and we'll come back in. But he's like, okay, yeah, no problem. You can see he's really, really into it right now, which is great.
You guys do a lot of training for your people?
Yeah. Well, he always taught me that hire somebody for their personality. You can train them how to fix cars. And I've always taken that, even with the younger guys, and tried to implement that. We use ABI On Demand and the WorldPack training videos CTI.
Yeah.
And Jonathan's been doing a lot of modules. He's working on his ASCs, which is great. And he's also working with Bill. And then also when my father goes down to the shop to solve a problem, you can see him hanging on his shoulder, looking over, just like I was when I was younger. And I used to have to go into the office with my tail between my legs and say, "Dad, I broke this. How do I fix this?" And he'd come out and he'd show me the right way. And so now he's showing Jonathan, which is great.
Good job, Dad. You didn't beat him up, did you?
No, I'm not like that.
Good.
That's not my thing.
So smart. No one's going to learn if they get beat up every time.
Well, I entered this business when that's what it was like. Everybody was always calling you an idiot and get out of my way. I mean, the older people, when I first got in the 70s, that's what it was like.
But they
like.
Were doing that because they wanted your hours, right?
No, they just, people were. It's our business. The old guys. And I didn't like that. And then at the dealer, when I was managing the shop, I eliminated that, like, because we had a foreman and he wasn't even that good, but he was always yelling at everybody. And I'm like, okay. Then when he left and then I was taking over, we're not doing that here. We're not yelling at people for no reason at all. Nobody learns when they're being yelled at. I took over the shop at Jaguar in 19. I was 28 years old. I took it over. Their productivity was 60%. Within 8 months, I had it up to 150 by just giving everybody what they wanted. One guy did engines. My partner was good with electrical. This guy, Ray, was great with services. And I just gave them what they wanted. And everybody just, and then even Jaguar came and said, "Help, what did you do?" I said, "I just gave them what they wanted and stopped yelling." And it was fine. I had 20 guys under me at one time. And we were cranking out the work and everybody was happy. And we used to go on trips and stuff together.
It's a miracle.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. Let's reinvent the wheel. And it worked fine. And we never had any problems. And the boss was happy. He was making money. And it was great. And I made money while I was there. And nobody messed with me. You know, so nobody bothered me. Like, that shop was almost as if it was my own. Nobody did anything.
Did you have the mustache and goatee back then?
I had a full beard back then.
Full beard?
Full beard back then. I've had a beard since 79. Since
I can ever remember.
Since 75, roughly.
Interesting. My wife has never seen me without a mustache.
Yeah. No, I've had a mustache even in high school, but then when I got out, I've had a beard since like 76.
But I had to shave it in basic training.
I've always had it.
Funny story, right? It was in the 70s, and I had to go to basic training. And all of us guys that were on the plane, we were all shaggy, really bushy, long hair, very unkempt. And I think we purposely grew it because we knew we were going to get it all cut off. So the night before, we're getting our basic training haircut. We all go into the men's room of the barracks and people were walking out. They had to shave any facial hair the night before we got our haircut. No one could recognize each other. And I'll never forget, this guy I became a really good friends with over the last 2 or 3 days. I shaved everything off my face. The mutton chops came off, the mustache and everything. And I walked by him and he goes, he didn't even recognize me. And it's amazing transformation that can happen when usually hairy and then now you're not. But Peter, your role in the business, what job are you doing to support the company?
Well, now he's taking over the office because that was the last part of the training. Like, he did the shop for 5 years. He does, you know, did the alignments. He's worked in the shop for way more than that, but full time for 5 years. So then he was good with that. We got involved with Cecil. And once we bought my partner out, that was when he could come in because he got along pretty good with Bill. Bill kind of fought it in the beginning. He was still a partner. He was kind of fighting it. Not that he would ever take over himself, but, you know, he just had to deal with it. Then Andrew started to come in the office Thanksgiving, right before COVID, for
actually,
the most part.
When you hurt your knee, you took a couple of days off.
When it hurt me. So he started going in the office and then I left it and we paid Bill off. He was kind of realized what was happening and he didn't really care. So we made the deal with him actually that January as we were going in. It was a year before COVID started. So it was 2021 we bought him out. So we had to deal with the banks and COVID. It was closing, it kind of dragged more than it had to.
It still happened pretty fast though. Even our attorney, Jim, was like, this is one of the fastest closings. Because it was very mutual. It wasn't like an argument. It wasn't a debate. It was like everybody was comfortable with what everybody was getting. So it wasn't like this drawn out process.
And he wanted out. He needed the money. He was never a very good saver, if you know what I mean. So he needed the money. And I said, just take the money and invest it and you'll be fine. You know, because he's a little younger than I am. Bill's 6 years younger than me. So I said, just save it. And by the time you're ready to collect Social Security, you got something going on. You know,
Andrew, did you ever work the counter?
When he would go on vacation, I would step into the office and I would do the office work and then run out to the shop.
Okay. I'm confused because when you say office, do you really mean the service advisor role?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I would write service. I mean, I knew Mitchell before I even graduated high school. I mean, I knew all the keystrokes. I was still in work when I was in high school. When he would go away, I would do things and stuff like that. So
Very few people in this business can fix cars and deal with customers. Most mechanics fix cars because they don't want to deal with customers.
Right.
And even Cecil said, I have owners who literally are still in the shop and they have a rider or a wife or whoever. They basically don't talk to people. I've always been both. I've always been able to write service and fix cars. And at the dealer, I was on the line and they were sending me out to deal with the customers. If you ever work at a dealer, you get those customers who, okay, well, he's ready to sue us. He's been back six times. The wheel still shakes, whatever it is. So they were sending me out to drive with these people and say, okay, this is the noise. And I'd be, okay, I got it. Well, anything else? Yeah. And that, okay. And write it. Then Bill or this guy, Ray, would come out with me and I said, okay, they're complaining about that and they're complaining about this. And we would fix it. Then I would call them back, the people. They would come. We'd go for a ride. I said, we good here? Is everything good? Oh, this is great. This is great. And it would end it. Usually they had been back six or seven times. I usually didn't get involved. If I got involved, there was a problem. That ended it. And then the CSI came out, remember, back in the 80s? Yeah. And that helped with the CSI, and Jaguar loved that technique and all that stuff. But it took a lot of time. And he can do the same thing. He can do what I do. Billy can't do it. Billy can't fix cars and talk to customers. I mean, a little bit, but he can't deal with distress. But he can. He can fix a car. He can do what I can do, for obvious reasons.
Is he a lot like you?
Exactly like me, according to my wife. My wife says, I have two husbands. One has to leave.
Remember when I fixed the fridge and she got upset because she wanted a new fridge?
Oh, my God.
The ice maker stopped working and they were away on vacation. Right. Then he came back. I'm like, oh, by the way, I fixed the ice maker while you were away. And he goes, does any of your friends' kids fix the ice maker while they go on vacation? She's like, I want a new fridge.
She should have just paid you to keep it broke.
Yeah. I mean, she liked it when we were younger. Oh, you know, you can fix things. I fix everything. But now that we're older, she just wants to buy a new one. I said, honey, these things are $3,000. I said, can't we just put the new faceplate on and be done with it?
It was never a problem when she was in her classroom and she wanted bookshelves built or closets hung. Remember going into the school and hanging stuff? Oh, my God. So.
But we are a lot alike. And he was home going to school. And then he was working at the shop. And he had a girlfriend who was in school waiting for him to get. But he's a lot like me. And he goes, you know, it's like I have two husbands here. You know, like, because they're both the same. I go, well, one of them will leave soon.
Hey, have you visited the NAPA AutoCare members site lately? Well, since its relaunch in 2020, the NAPA AutoCare members site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the NAPA programs, promotions, member benefits, and business building tools to help your business thrive. Some features to the members site include never miss an update, stay current with notifications and announcements on the homepage, and view the dashboard featuring your shop's financial status. Also, take advantage of cost-saving member exclusive promotions and a faster automated 24/24 peace-of-mind warranty submission process. Submit re-repair claims directly on the member site and easily check the status there as well. Now, typically, the claim is settled and EFT or credit card payment is sent within 48 hours. Turn searches into a new customer with a referral tracker. Now learn more about how a consumer NAPA online search for your shop can generate new customers at no additional cost to members. Use this popular customer tool to evolve your marketing strategies and to get the most business value. Own more than one NAPA AutoCare? Link all your facilities to one login and access all the facilities to one user. You can also access the Shop NAPA Helm or Pro Office website directly. You can also submit a Pro Image free look for a sneak peek at how you can co-brand your locally known name with a nationally recognized NAPA brand. Also, submit online ASE certification renewal and test reimbursements. You also get exclusive access to dozens of industry-leading programs and solutions. Now, if you're a NAPA Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal and take advantage of these many member benefits today. Now, if you're not a NAPA Auto Care Center, contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the NAPA family.
It is so unique that you can not only talk car, but you can talk people.
Oh, yeah.
It's really a special person because 90% of every technician who wants to open a shop because it's easy to see all the money my boss makes, the reason that they need coaches, they wait 10 years when they're failing miserably and they can't pay their bills. They should do it right away. This is what we talk about on our show all the time because we're a business Acumen podcast, where we're teaching experiences and stories like you. I know there's going to be people out there that will relate to this. Yeah. They may just send this to a friend of theirs and says, listen, exactly what Peter said, you can't talk people. So either you stay in the Bay or you find somebody who can actually write service for you, because we need more cars. We need more everything.
One of the things that always amazed me about my father, he's never fought change. Even when he was at the dealership, he always talks about this guy, Paul Kern.
Yeah, he was a consultant.
He was a consultant that they hired, and they brought him in, and he learned so much from Paul. But the dealership fought it, and he was like talking to Kenny Grant, and they were like, you know, you're fighting everything this guy's saying, and if we just implement one or two things, you'll see some major changes. And then about 10 years ago, we went to our first Cecil meeting at the AutoLogic building in Colmac, and we're actually on our way to go see Cora in the hospital because she was born that day. And we just looked at each other. He goes, we need to implement some of these changes and we'll see some major changes in the profit and just the way the company runs. And we did. From that meeting, from that class, we took three things, right? Profit matrix. Yeah.
You were in your 20s.
I was actually 19.
Wow.
Yeah, 19, 20.
He was doing a thing on parts matrix and stuff like that.
It was the first service advisor class. Yeah. And we got it from WorldPAC, and the guy, Glenn from WorldPAC, came in and said, hey, if you guys are interested, we have this class, blah, blah, blah. And my dad's like, all right, you know, this looks kind of like what I remember from Paul Kern. Let's go. And you'll see. And we automatically just, as people say, we drank the Kool-Aid. Over the years, it took us a couple of years to position the business so that we can bring Cecil on. And then just 2 years ago, we signed on with Cecil as a client.
Okay, so you went to his training, you took some notes, and you said, maybe we need to do some of this stuff. You did it. It started to work. It made a difference.
It worked immediately. I mean, we paid $500, was it?
The first class, I think we increased sales about $30,000 to $40,000.
We went in June.
In 6 months.
And he was just talking about the matrix stuff and like list price and stuff. And I was like, all right, we can do that. Because with the Mitchell, you can just change it.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say it went up $50,000. So I spent $500 to make $50,000 in a 6 month
period. And then we went to another class and then another class.
Yeah.
And
Hunt Demarest did a podcast on the price matrix in this inflationary world. Yeah. And it's important that everyone who's listening needs to open up that parts matrix and change some of your left column ranges. And Hunt brought up this incredible analogy. And every time I tell it to people, they just slap themselves upside the head. Because if it was 1905, your left column may be 1 penny to 19 cents, right? Let's go back in the day. And today, say, for example, you're 1 penny up to, say, $12, and you're making 80% on that. Well, that $12 part now costs 15. So you got to move that 12 to 15 and shake everything down on the left column. And I think it's really critical that we all pay attention to that, because inflation has and can and will affect. We may be making more dollars, but we have to get that done with a different margin.
Right.
Yeah. But it does it automatically for us. Like the tech metrics are automatically increases it. Like, so whatever your cost is, it automatically, it goes up a percentage.
No,
so,
I get that. Yeah. But the range needs to be looked at, because now parts cost.
We look at that every couple months just to make sure we're staying in the line. Because I did get that from Hunt at the WorldPAC class.
Cool.
That's something we look at.
Peter, I think Andrew just said someone has influenced you. What was his name? Kern?
Paul Kern. Right?
Paul Kern. Was he your biggest influence?
He was the first time I came in contact with somebody in a service writer position. I had gone to classes at Jaguar, and they don't obviously tell you anything about customers. They teach you how to fix cars. And they hired this guy, and he was out of Virginia. They found him at an ADA meeting. They used to go every year. Sure. And they said, oh, this guy Paul Kern's going to come, and blah, blah, blah. I need you to listen to him. I'm like, okay. So he came, and he worked with each department. He worked with sales, parts, the girls in the office, and then he did service. And at dealerships, if you've ever had any experience with them, they have a lot of costs. I mean, we have the mechanics, the writers, the reception lady, the five guys that move cars around. There's a lot of expenses there. And he would come in, and he was looking at the tickets and analyzing the tickets and realizing, you know, you guys, your CP is way down, blah, 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 blah. And he was showing you, like, our scheduling was all screwed up because the girl was just letting people come in, and we're like writing these people up. And it's like, well, we got like 20 people on a Monday, but at the end of the week, we got 100 people, and we can't service these people, you know, and warranty stuff, nonsense, squeaks and rattles. And they were tying up. You can't do a brake job because we're looking at squeaks and rattles. Car's been there for 3 days. We're running out of loaners. So it was the first time I saw somebody say, it was so simple. It made such common sense. I was like, look, this is what you do. You took the hours here. Well, you used up all your hours. Now you got to go to Tuesday. It was like so simple, but we weren't doing any of it. So I said, okay. But then we have these meetings and like, well, are we doing this? Nah, it's not going to work here. Are we doing this? No, it's not going to work. Like, okay. Right. Nothing's going to work. You're but then when I left, I realized that you have to know what you don't know.
Right.
You can't change it. And it worked out. We went to the CISO meeting and I said to him right away, I said, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Cool. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yes.
Andrew, an influencer for you, your biggest influence. Who was that person?
I would probably say my father.
Okay.
I mean, he definitely showed me a lot of things. And we always had this thing growing up, you know, my brothers will laugh. Failure was not an option.
Wait a minute. That's Apollo 13.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's where he got it from. Failure was not an option, but he worked with you a little bit. And he always showed you the right way to do things. He always showed you the right outcome.
Is he a teacher?
Yes. He's not a yeller. I mean, I was actually telling this story to my wife the other day. I have probably in all my life heard my father yell 3 times. And it wasn't really an argument. And it wasn't even directly to any of his kids. It was just something that happened, you know, with somebody else. It wasn't a customer. It was his stepson. But I mean, I've never heard him yell or anything like that. Whenever I've had a problem, it's always been, okay, look, this is what happened. You knew this was going to be the outcome. This is how we're going to fix it. And you know, that was been the end of it.
And are you a different person because of what you learned from your dad?
Absolutely. Now that I'm working with the younger kids, like especially Jonathan, yeah, I hear a lot of the things that he taught me coming out, and I can help these guys become great mechanics just like he taught me how to be a great mechanic.
You were recently married?
Yes.
When?
December 2nd.
Wow. Still on your honeymoon?
Yeah, still on the honeymoon stage.
Just checking. How was the wedding, Dad?
It was good. He did a good job. They handled the whole thing.
My wife did an amazing job. She planned everything.
And they kept it under control,
yes,
finance-wise, and everything. It was great.
Oh, good. I like that part. Yeah. Tracy's getting married in September.
You know, he did. I want to say it was what they could afford. And I said, you know, this is going to taste a lot better if it's what you can afford. You start going over, then all of a sudden it doesn't taste good. You know, it's like, oh, my God. So he's good that way.
Look back in the last 10 years, Peter. What's changed to top of your list?
In our business?
Yeah.
The biggest change that I didn't anticipate were the hiring. I mean, I cannot believe, like when I first started, we had hired a guy, Rob. He was okay. It was an issue here and there. I don't lower the bar. I know that's a thing now where everybody wants equality of outcome, so we're going to lower the bar. I don't lower the bar. Like he tells you, oh, failure is not an option. It's not that I don't allow them to fail. I don't allow them to not try. At least try it. If we fail, we'll try again. That's what that means. I don't want everyone to think I'm some crazy person.
Yeah.
But it's just, you have to try. I don't like people to walk away. Oh, I can't do it. Did you try? Well, I know I can't do it. Okay, hang on a second. Let's try. Anyway, the young people, it's like, what happened? I call them man babies. It's like ridiculous. It's like they come in and it's like, what is going on here? Like, I don't know. I mean, between the phones and they're so preoccupied. I'm like, what happened here? So I never thought that that would be an issue moving forward. I hired a fellow, Zoe. His name was Zoe. Knew nothing. He went to Lincoln Tech. He didn't pay attention, whatever. His parents. So I said, we bring him in. He brings his old piece of junk car. I said, okay, bring your car. Let's look at it. Fix your car. Call parts people. Get your car fixed. You can't get here with a bad car. They fix the car. He goes, and he's into it. You know, he's skimming around, a few issues. And he says to me, what's my headache? He's made me a month. I go, okay, what's the matter? My teeth hurt. I said, okay, here's the name of my dentist. Go to my dentist and get your teeth fixed. He goes, what? I go, when was the last time I went to the dentist? I don't know. I said, go to my guy. The guy calls me up. He goes, look, I can't talk about his teeth, but the bottom line is $2,500. He needs what to work. He's got impounded teeth, infection, the whole thing. I'm like, okay, fix his teeth. Send me the bill. His mother comes down. And she pays the bill because she was almost embarrassed. He was only 18, 19?
Yeah.
19 at the time. But he felt like $1 million. You saw a boom. I go, how long were your teeth hurting you? I mean, you could see it was like a new person. Now he's working, coming in. He stays late. He doesn't care about overtime. And he really took off. And he was with me 7 years. We have a pension plan. He has medical benefits, stuff like that. He was doing okay. And he got a girlfriend. And all of a sudden, I was an idiot, and that was the end of that. It didn't last much longer. But he went to a dealer. I spoke to the service manager at the dealer, like he was working at Land Rover. He has a few personality traits, but the guy says, you know what? He's one of our better guys. He's still there, married, and he's got a kid. You could see he's become like a normal person. I hate to say that, but and he's doing good. And I went to the dealer to borrow a tool, And hey, Pete, how you doing? The whole thing, no hard feelings or nothing. He's
explain something to me. He became like a normal person, but well, a normal person like us. In your
me. He became like us. He became like us. He goes to work every day.
Productive member of society.
Yeah, he goes to work every day. Has a kid now. He's got a wife. And he goes, shows up at the bank. I asked the service manager. I know him for years. He goes, oh, he comes in on time every day. He's not so bad with the phone. He's working and fine. He goes, he's become one of my better guys.
Do you take credit for that?
Well, I think I straightened them out. I call it re-raising them. I try to re-raise them. You know what I mean? Like their parents messed up, so I'll take over from here. Oh, you wouldn't believe the nonsense they were giving him. He's the poor kid, like, was terrible. He didn't even have a checkbook. These guys had checkbooks when they were 16 years old. Like the Roslyn by us, we have a Roslyn savings. They'd give him the check. Yeah. You know, they paid their own stuff with their checkbook. Things like that. I mean, get in the game. I got married at 18. I was like, what are we waiting for? You know, like, I'm
you are so refreshing to talk to. It's got to be a riot to work with your dad because
really
he's
is.
Such a straight shooter.
He is. And, you know, like I say, the failure is not an option. I mean, we did fail when we were younger, but he let us fail and then
exactly. And
worked the problem out on our own.
Yeah.
It made us who we are because we've been able to work through problems. Even me and my brothers, my wife always says like, oh, have you spoken to your brothers? I'm like, why do I need to speak to my brothers? You know, if they need something, they'll call me. If I need something, I'll call them. But she talks to her sister daily. And I mean, I guess, you know, that's what women do. But for guys, that's not like us. But for me and my brothers, we handle our own problems because he let us deal with our own problems. And when my brothers got into car accidents, he made them pay the body shop. You know, he didn't step in and be like, oh, here's my credit card. No. You messed up. This is your problem. You're a big boy now and fix the problem. When Kevin blew up the engine in the Blazer, he handed him the invoice and said, you know, obviously we didn't charge him that much labor, but we charged him the time for Bill to put the engine in and he paid the bill for Jasper and Kevin had to pay the bill for the engine. And when he blew the transmission up, same thing. And then when Brian smashed the Pontiac in Camp Lejeune, he had to pay for the repairs. I mean, we failed and failure was not an option, but there was no, Dad, can you help me? Like, I mean, if you needed it, he helped you, but you had to be a big boy about it.
Andrew, are you a rule maker or a rule breaker?
I was the youngest. My brother.
What's that got to do with this?
So here's my brother, Kevin, pushed the rules. I always stayed in the rule section. I was a lot like my father, so the rules got bent a little bit for me, I would say, sometimes.
So when this session plan happens, Peter, whenever it happens, and he's in the catbird seat someday, and you're doing whatever it is you choose to do, is he going to be like you?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's actually a little better than I am at it because he's younger than I am. So he's better at it than I am. He's better at the selling than I am.
Thank
and
you.
He's better with the customers. He's got a little... He's a little smoother with the customers, but he's been doing the selling seminars. I never had any practical selling training.
Yeah,
I mean, I never was trained to sell. I mean, Jaguar sends you to a service writer school. They basically pay a psych major to come in and tell you why you hate people, you know, and how to deal with it. You know what I mean? You sit there for four all day, actually, and she just explains how to control your stress so you're not killing somebody because it's a stressful type thing. It was good. I mean, they don't teach you how to sell. They just teach you how to calm down. So,
all right. Tell me about Long Island. Are there a lot of shops that are looking to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shops? Is it consolidating and expanding multi-shop ownership going on there?
No, we're actually, I would say, I mean, I don't know the statistics, but in our area, we've lost 5 shops in the last 20 years that had been in business for 30, 40 years. They just close up and nobody takes over. And by us, and I probably other places, most people don't want their kids to get into this business. I mean, we have 4 of them right near us and they would never allow their kids to, they don't even come to the shop or anything. One fella, nice guy, he's been around forever. He tried to bring his son in. You know, he wasn't coming all the time. I don't think this is the business where you say, hey, you're not doing anything. Come with me. You're going to do this.
They got to want to.
Yeah. You got to want to do this business. Mm-hmm, I don't want to say it's like, my wife's a teacher. You're either want to be a teacher and you're good at it and you like kids or you're not going to be doing that long. My wife taught for 30 years and she literally would do it for free. That's how much she likes it. Nursing, another profession. You either like nursing or you don't. Fixing cars. I know it's not as prestigious as those, but you either like fixing cars or things in general and you'll do good. You can't take somebody who is like, oh, I was going to be ahead of CBS, but I'll fix cars instead. It's not going to happen. You're not going to do that. You know what I mean? And sometimes I could tell him, you got to hire personality. You got to hire somebody who wants to fix cars, who wants to come in every day and doesn't mind getting sopping wet and freezing cold in order to do it. Because, I mean, it is what it is. We're fixing cars. You know what I mean?
Final words, Andrew.
Final words.
Yeah. What do you want to tell my listener about father-son?
It's definitely very enjoyable working with my father. I have a different relationship with my father than my other two brothers, and that's something that I really cherish.
You're around him every day.
I'm around him every day. We have a different sense of humor than, like I said, than my other brothers. I would say the most important thing is don't fight change. One of the things that, like I said, he always taught me is change is good. Whether it works out in your favor or not, any change is good. It's just how you react to the change. And that's going to be the most important outcome. And if you need help, don't be afraid to reach out to anybody in the community, you know, networking and a business consultant like the Institute.
Has Andrew, Peter, ever brought you something recently and sold you on it, but you weren't ready to change?
No, not really. I pretty much let him do whatever he wants. I told him before, you can't break anything I can't fix, so you can do whatever you want.
Oh, I love
wants.
That. Yeah. I mean, he's got your back.
So I said,
he always has.
Yeah, I mean, I let him do whatever he wants. I have totally stepped away. I drive cars now and go to the car wash. And
I love that.
That's all I do. If they have a problem, I'll go there. Like if they need something welded or drilled or whatever. If you need something repaired, I'm the one who will come and say, we can or we cannot do that. That's it. And
like then the motorhome.
Like the motorhome. You know, like the motorhome. We don't usually work on that stuff, but whatever. Yeah, that's it. I don't have to deal with the customers anymore, which has been a big relief because I was kind of like, I'm running out of juice. You know what I mean? Yeah, my cup is getting empty.
I got it.
I mean, I could. If he said, hey, I can't come in tomorrow, I can obviously write the service, but I don't have to anymore. So like he deals with the people, sells the work, selling much more than I did. And it's working out great. And I just drive the cars, drive people home. And he's there so long that the regulars know him, but he's with another type of advertising person who's bringing in a lot of Audis and Mercedes and things like that. So we have probably, I want to say in the course, we do 100 cars, maybe 120 cars a month. I want to say 25 of them are brand new customers every month almost that we've never seen.
That's about the number too.
Yeah.
You need to have.
Yeah. And it's fine. He deals with them. They don't need to see me because Cecil brought that up to us. He goes, you know, the worst thing I get involved with these shops and they called it Pete's Automotive. Now the problem is everybody wants Pete. And he goes, it's really hard to sell those and get out. So we obviously didn't do that, which he was happy about.
Any message to father-son relationship for our listener? Just let him do what he wants to do and have his back, right?
It's like step out of the way, basically. Step out. But everybody's different. I mean, Andrew's different. Yeah, I'm very lucky. He's taking control. I've allowed him go. But he's that kind of person. I don't know if that would work with everybody.
I know,
didn't work with this other fella. You know, his son did good. He was a smart kid, but he didn't have the drive. You know, you have to be into it. Andrew loves doing this, and I could tell he likes doing it.
There's no universal answer to this. The individual that is your sibling, daughter or son, has to have the want, the desire, the capabilities, and if not, go get him the training, right?
Or let him do what he really wants to do. The only thing is, just be honest with yourself. Can he do this? Does he want to do this? Because if he doesn't, you're going to have to find somebody else or it's time to...
Andrew, anything else that you'd rather be doing than this?
No. I mean, I've always loved working with my hands. I mean, I got to work with my father. I still get to work with my father every day. Sometimes we have lunch together. Sometimes we don't. I really enjoy fixing cars. Now that I'm in the office, sometimes I miss it. Sometimes I might book an extra alignment just so I can go around out there and do it. I still love to listen to Keith during the training.
Where is Andrew? He's in the bays.
Yeah. So, but I love it. I love the business. I love the industry. I love how it's evolving over the years. Wish we didn't have a hiring problem right now, but we'll work through it. We'll come up with ways to fix that.
Well, many years of success. Can't wait to have you on in the future so you can tell us how everything is going and how Dad continues to work his way out of the business.
Thank you.
Wow, how cool is that? Andrew Knutson. And Peter Knutson, Coventry Motors, Huntington Station, Long Island. Thanks for being here at TST, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.